Stripe helps many of the world's most influential companies grow their revenue and build a more profitable business. Whether it's Hertz making checkout a smooth ride for their customers, OpenAI answering unprecedented demand, or PGA chipping away at back office inefficiency, Stripe's financial infrastructure platform helps companies achieve ambitious goals. No matter what success looks like for your business, Stripe helps ensure the complexity of financial systems doesn't get in your way. Learn more at stripe.com.
Is it time to reimagine your future? The right business skills may make a difference in your career. At Capella University, we offer a relevant education that's designed to focus on what you need to know in the business world. We'll teach professional skills to help you pursue your goals, like business management, strategic planning, and effective communication. And you can apply these skills right away. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
So, we look at the business stories of the day and of the weekend and indeed the week. And delighted to be joined by Conor Faughlin. He's a motoring commentator and he's a consultant to the RIC. Also joining us from the HR suite is Caroline Reedy. Caroline, you're welcome to the programme.
Pleasure, Bobby.
And I'm going to start with you as an honorary Kerry person because our first story is a good news one and it comes from the front page of the Irish Examiner and it says Dingle's Phoenix to rise under new owner Cillian Murphy. What about this?
Yeah, it's a great news story for Dingle. Both Cillian Murphy and his artistic wife Yvonne McGuinness have snapped up Dingle's iconic cinema. They're confirming that they're going to invest some money in it and really re-bring it back to life. And also they're saying they're going to do maybe other uses to it as well. But Dingle itself has got this eclectic charm. Yeah. And there always seems to be something on there, whether it's the food festivals, whether it's the other voices. And I think they're really going to capture the imagination here because Dingle's a huge tourist hub. You can see with Yvonne's artistic background and his also combined, I think they're going to do something really special here and make this a really good standalone business. And as we know, if you do something well, it'll be a drawing card for the rest of the businesses in Dingle to benefit from as well.
Conor, this is a building with a rich history. Yeah. Again, the only cinema, I think, in the Gaeltacht area.
Right.
And I presume the seats in those their cinemas could tell a few tales.
I'd imagine they could. Yeah, it's there for over 100 years and it's an iconic location in Dingle. And so great news, nice warm story. I do hope that it thrives on its own merits, that they, you know, they make a good investment of it. It'd be nice if it's saved, you know, simply by a sugar daddy or patron. But I think it's better again if, as Caroline says, they make a growing enterprise in there. And so I hope that, congratulations to Cillian and Yvonne, and I hope they make a substantial return on their investment.
Yeah,
I think it augurs well.
You know, as Caroline said there, you know, that artistic culture that's embedded in Dingle, people from an artistic background, the history and legacy of the building, it all points the right way.
It does. It's a slightly different offer there than a traditional cinema, but you could see good things happening there, and please God they will.
Let's go to Matt Cooper's analysis in today's Mail about Trump is coming for us, so we better get ready. Caroline.
Yeah, so I think this is a really good reality check story. And in fairness to Matt Cooper, he has written it really well. I suppose what he's also reminding us, as we've a week to go or less in the elections, that the giveaway budget plans that people have in their election promises are really unrealistic. And no matter how much they'd like to get those become a reality, based on the numbers, it doesn't look realistic based on the costs. And what he's also saying is we're very dependent on the US and the US economy in helping with that as well. And I suppose ultimately you'd argue Trump might be, his bark is worse than his bite, because in the term he was in already, he didn't do anything to negatively impact the reshoring of jobs, which he's talking about here. But sometimes it's maybe the people around him where he has a new, he's Howard Lutwick involved as his Commerce Secretary now.
He's got us in his sights.
Yeah, and he basically is saying that, look, Ireland shouldn't be benefiting as much as they do from all of this American business. But in reality, I suppose, it's not, I don't think it's as easy for Trump to do what he's talking about, because we're lucky we've got the pharma skills embedded here. Like Apple is here a very long time.
Capital infrastructure.
Exactly. So I don't think it's going to be as easy as he thinks. But I also think the other half of the story, which is saying, look, these pre-election promises, they can't become a reality because the money won't be in the kitty. Yeah.
Well, the standout line for me here, Conor, and it jumps off the page, is that corporate taxes are expected to reach nearly $30 billion this year, three times more than they were in 2020. Yeah. That's only 4 years ago. They've increased threefold.
And we know there's a bit more coming, but we also know that it's finite. And I think Matt has two reality checks. One is on the numbers. So whoever wins this election, I sincerely hope that they break all of their pre-election promises, because you know, even were we to have that money on hand, the spending plans for it are excessive to the point of being ludicrous. There's a Dutch auction going on, and I hope the electorate are ignoring it, and I hope that an incoming government will behave more responsibly than the electioneering that's going on now. So we can't assume that we're going to have this money forever.
But am I right in saying, Conor, I didn't mean to cut across you, but am I right in saying that the main political parties, and Sinn Féin's is even worse, are predicting no change for a decade on corporate taxation?
They're predicting that we will have a surplus of at least $10 billion per annum for at least a decade, which is a bit like having a sunny weekend in June and saying that you're now going to have a barbecue every Saturday afternoon until Christmas. It's ridiculous. And I think Matt points that out well. And the other thing, which the second half of it, is the Trump factor. And so we don't know. His bark has been worse than his bite previously. We survived the last Trump term. We'll probably survive this one. But one thing I think is interesting, over to the Irish diplomatic corps. We're a country without an army, but you know, we have had historically very good diplomats. We navigated Brexit. That was done very well. Next challenge is, I was in Washington myself a week or so ago. I think we need to get active over there. There are a lot of people that need to be spoken to in Washington, in Florida, people you didn't think you were going to have to speak to. But there's a charm offensive and a reality check needed for Ireland Inc. with our friends across the water.
And do you agree with Caroline, Conor, that the embeddedness, let's call it, of the foreign direct investment is quite sticky, and it would be difficult to unravel.
Even if you want, it's entirely true. So Apple is not a brass plaque on a wall in the Canaries. I mean, they've been here since the 80s. Steve Jobs came over to Cork, whatever that is, 40 plus years ago. And so there's a huge amount of, you know, they have very deep roots here. Likewise, the pharma sector down in Cork as well. I think we will have to sort of take the temperature out of the American sound bites. You know, probably they'll want a couple of conspicuous wins. But I hope, one hopes, that no more than the Irish parties competing at the moment, once Trump and his cronies are actually in power,
that it may not be as bad.
A little bit, by real life, by the practical implications of some of the stuff they're saying. But the sound bites are crazy, as we know.
Caroline, as somebody involved in the HR industry, life insurance is a real it's a real important part of anybody's employment package now, and we're seeing here today that Irish Life is about to hike premiums for the third time in over a year, coming at a time when there's a new entrant coming into the market. I would suggest that this is a very dangerous pricing strategy.
I suppose you're absolutely right. And it's interesting that you say how much of an employer issue this is too, because most employers in Ireland now offer health insurance as part of their benefit package.
Yeah.
And it's a really valuable benefit for employees to get, especially considering the amount of price hikes that have been happening between 10 and 15% this year. And I suppose Aviva have a new offering now with Level Health, but then we only have VHI, Laya and Irish Life in the market other than that. And each plan is going to go up between 50 and 150 euro per family. So this time of year is the busiest time for renewals. So there's a big, I suppose, reminder for listeners to think about doing a shopping list to say what's most important and what do I really need in my health insurance, and maybe pricing it around. And I think think for a lot of employers as well, as we are all so conscious that the cost of doing business has increased so much, that I think you'll have a lot of employers shopping around as well to say, you know, what can I get in terms of better value? Because what's important to the customer now, I think, is going to be that value, because the cost of health is increasing. I mean, there's a shocking number in this article where it says that the cost of high-cost drugs, clinical drugs, has gone up 58%. I mean, that's a shocking cost, and health is so much more important. I could see in time that this will be like the auto-enrollment problem we have now, where the cost of healthcare will have to think very significantly about how do we help people manage it, because a lot of people don't have health insurance.
And the average is 1,712 euros per annum, which is a big sum. Connor, one of the, I suppose, jump out stats here, Dermot Good, who's a total health cover, he's an expert in this area. I often find his analysis is really, really, really excellent. But he says that any member who's on the same Irish Life Health plan for 3 years or more should seriously consider reviewing their cover and make sure that they're on the most up-to-date and best value for money scheme. So,
yeah, I suspect that's very good advice, because I often say it about motor insurance. And if you renew complacently every year, the chances are you're being diddled. So no matter who your provider is, kick them on the shins. That 58%, Caroline, by the way, that's on the cost of drugs since 2001. So it's a huge surge.
Yeah.
So I think you have two things happening there. Firstly, there's what you might consider ordinary inflation that every business is facing. So your staff costs, your X, Y, and Z. But medical inflation is clearly significantly in excess of that. So with all of the players talking about a price rise between 10 and 15%, and they're pointing to factors that ain't going to change. So I would think the direction of travel societally for the cost of our health insurance, for the cost of our health cover generally, we're going to have to reflect on this even generationally, because that's only going in one direction. I cannot see the arrow changing. We're going to continually pay more and more and more for what, in fairness, is better health cover. We're planning to live longer.
So
that's good.
But those health insurers, like, they immediately pass on all the costs to the consumer. There's no...
Well, do you know, if you've got a tight number of players, so what have you, four people in that space?
And a new entrant, which could shake things up a bit.
I used to look at petrol and diesel this way. And if prices are moving together like line dancers... Yet part of you is sceptical, saying, now, hang on, is proper competition occurring here, because they are moving in lockstep? And the other is, you know, maybe it's what it appears to be. If their costs are moving in exactly the same way, then maybe it's exactly what it appears. And the consumer's defence against that traditionally is competition. So it's good that Aviva are jumping into that space. It's a little bit strange that everybody is increasing prices just as Aviva jump in. And maybe from their point of view, that's not a bad time. You know, with rising premiums, not a bad time to set out and acquire business. So, listen, good luck to them. Good luck to them. And hopefully competition will moderate what is clearly a household bill that is going to go up in the future.
And you're right to say, Caroline, that this is equally important to employers as well as employees.
Yeah, without doubt. I think, and we know, we've seen even in some of the other stories, the costs of doing business, minimum wage, all of the other things that are coming. And this combined, I think you're going to see a lot more looking at costs.
Yeah.
So we'll watch this story and see how it evolves.
Connor, here's one for you. Cash for drivers who scrap petrol and diesel cars under a proposed Fine Gael scheme.
Well, there
Why didn't we see this 2 years ago?
Yeah, well, there you go. Listen, look across the smorgasbord of political offers that are available to you. There are people out there literally promising a Lewis for every county. So, throw it up in the air. However, a scrappage scheme, this comes from Fine Gael, it's Alan Farrell. It actually is a good idea, potentially. We have seen it work before. We had a scrappage scheme in Ireland back in the late 90s, early 2000s, just before the NCT was introduced.
Yeah.
And the premise then was, bring your old junker with the smoke vomiting out the back of it, scrap it, you get a nice new car, and do it in time for the NCT. The consumer really responded. We had a huge surge in new car sales. The plan here would be to scrap your petrol or diesel if you're buying a new electric. We've got to do more to promote the sale of electric vehicles. They've been anemic. The government has had a couple of little incentives for you, but they've pared some of them back, and it's just really hasn't got the fair wind behind it. I think a scrappage deal like this, actually, from the smorgasbord of pre-election promises that are flying through the air, of all the ideas out there, this is actually quite a good one, I think.
And if this was coupled, Caroline, with May, say, a break on benefit in kind around electric cars for company use and personal use, the twinning of that with this,
you know, it's
could
a,
be a game changer.
It's amazing what the punter responds to, Caroline. Yeah. I mean, you used to get free tolls on the M50. Do the maths on that. It's not a huge piece of economics.
Connor, I can't remember that at all.
No. If you had an electric vehicle, up until a year or two ago, you'd hugely reduced toll on the M50. Now it's gone back to the normal toll. All these kind of little soft factors that are supposed to be pulling you towards electric vehicles, and in fact, you know, government are pulling you the other way.
Yeah, I think the other part of that story, which is the piece around the public transport, and they're saying, look, we're reducing costs also on public transport to encourage more people. Like, certain days of the week, the traffic is so bumper to bumper, it really is still such a big, significant problem.
Which is really odd with less people demonstratively coming into town.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
Well, we still have traffic and we still have jammed public transport and we still don't have a metro. But probably not time to go deeply into that one, Bobby.
We'll save that for another day, Connor. But let me bring you to another matter that I'm sure keeps you awake at night. Volkswagen woes reflect the wider German malaise as electioneers. German car industry languishing amid struggle to master electric vehicles, as we're told by Joe Brennan in today's Irish Times. This is really interesting.
It is a fascinating article. And, you know, Volkswagen is Germany in microcosm. It's a former powerhouse. It was the centre of innovation for decades and decades. German heavy industry was the best in the world. And to some degree, a victim of its success. Germany Inc. Has about a quarter of its workforce engaged in heavy industry. Volkswagen alone, 300,000 workers.
Massive.
And, you know, if you think sort of tectonically, they're so embedded there now that it's no longer a dynamic industry. There's lots of inertia. The union is extremely powerful. They play in politics. It's very difficult to implement change. And at the same time, they have fleet-footed entrepreneurs in the likes of BYD in China who are producing top quality electric cars at a third less the cost than the Volkswagen Group can manage. And they're just not able to compete in that space, and they're losing market share. They've also to some degree bet the farm on it. Volkswagen has committed to €4 billion per annum for 7 years on research and development for electric cars. So it's an extraordinary kind of seismic move. They're not doing it fast enough. They're not doing it as efficiently as they can. There's inertial factors absolutely everywhere, including German politics. And they find themselves, you know, they used to be the dynamic brand, and they are now.
But it's a great example, is it not, of, you know, over-dependence on one sector.
Absolutely.
You're talking there about BMW, Mercedes-Benz. They're down 34 and 18% respect. So if you look at it collectively, the sector is employing 800,000 people in the home market, and it supports more than a further 2 million indirectly across 1,000 Mittelstand businesses. They're the small SMEs.
Yeah, small SMEs that feed into the supply chain. So it's a massive, massive industry in Germany. And look, it still will be. But what they have to do is to get through this phase, convert to electric vehicles and start producing models that are attractive to the consumer at reasonable prices. And I don't think you can do that, no more than Trump and his tariffs. I don't think you can do that by shutting out the Chinese entrepreneurs and commanding Volkswagen on foot of incentives and perks and political. So I that's Germany's dilemma at the moment. They're hamstrung. And to some degree, those heavy industry workers are beginning to look a bit like the miners in the UK in the 80s. You know, it's a huge industry, so huge it's too big to fail. And with that,
and change will be painful.
Yeah, very.
Let's bring you on to the hospitality sector. Mixed fortunes there, but largely good. We see that results for the 5-star Dromoland Castle hitting a record 31.4 million in sales. That's unbelievable for that property. We're also told about results in the Shelbourne and indeed Clontarf Castle, both really, really juicy bottom lines in both those cases, Caroline.
Absolutely. And it just shows you that they've obviously targeted a specific niche customer, because their room rate is between €790 and €3,500 per night
in Drumolland,
for example. So they're picking very niche customers, and they obviously are doing it exceptionally well. And they employ a serious amount of people as well. Using Drumolland as an example, again, 450 people. And the other interesting point I thought was, you know, the difference between, I suppose, revenue, sales is vanity, profit is sanity. But €2 million extra went on their bottom line last year because of the COVID grants that they don't have this year. But hugely profitable, and getting an increase in room rate and getting an increase on the others. And again, I suppose the ongoing political debate now about the VAT rate is still being talked about. But when you see these type of profits and numbers, you would suggest maybe that there's a smaller restaurant and coffee shop is in a very different world of trouble and costs, etc., than some of these really successful niche high-end properties.
And again, interesting to see Fine Gael now trumpeting the VAT reduction, and yet they didn't allow it 2 months ago.
Do you know, I'm delighted for Mark Nolan and the team down there. I knew them of old a number of years ago, and it's a very profitable venture. I say one thing about that five-star luxury end of the market. Those are astonishing room rates, but you really have to earn that every penny, every day.
It's hard.
If you're going to live in the five-star end, your commitment to quality is absolutely extraordinary. So you do not get that sort of money without working your backside off as a whole team. So good luck to him. It also makes me think, Bobby, why would anybody in their right mind give up the hotel industry to go and sell coffee, huh?
Yeah, I know. I ask myself that every day. There you go.
Brilliant.
Caroline, number of construction workers back to boom levels, data reveals. Not quite where we were in 2007, but close.
Yeah, so we had 116,000 workers in 2007 at the peak of the Celtic Tiger. And now we've about 80,000 employees. The difference is, I suppose, we're nowhere near where we still need to be. And we really need to be creative on how are we going to inject more employees into this market, which badly needs it. Interestingly, about 60,000 houses started, expecting 40,000 to be completed. But I suppose it's the pace issue that's the problem. And rather than it continuing to dribble along, it needs a seismic shift. So we need to do something around work permits. We need to do something around incentives, etc., to get workers into this
market. Is the work permit thing still very challenging?
Absolutely.
In terms of who you can bring in to do a particular job.
Absolutely. I mean, it's relaxed a little in some areas in the last couple of months where the legislation was updated, where people can more easily move between employers, etc. But still, something like this needs a huge marketing campaign where we're saying Ireland wants you, and these are the, you know, opportunities. Absolutely.
And they did it really well.
Yeah. Really, really well. And we need that if we're going to anyway do that seismic shift that's needed.
Conor, last word to you. Wish you were here. Well, we don't. The Irish Mail telling us that the 4 hours travel go and no go lists have been announced, and the Scotland's North Coast 500, they're telling you not to go there.
They're telling you not to go there. This is Scotland's answer to the Wild Atlantic Way up there in the north of Scotland, and apparently they're absolutely sick of over tourism, of you know, retired couples from down in England tootling around in their camper vans. In the UK, you can just pull up and park, and you don't need.
So I think that's only in Scotland, not in the wider UK.
It's certainly the case up in the northwest of Scotland. And apparently it's littered with tourists, almost literally, and the locals are sick of it. So it's joined the long list of locations where people have said, tourists, please stay away. And that includes places like Barcelona, Mallorca, Venice. And, you know, funny, myself and Caroline were talking outside. Often they're not saying tourists aren't welcome. You're as welcome as ever you were, but they're facing the same problems we have. I mean, their students can't get accommodation. In Barcelona, for example, if you want to go to one of the universities there, you nearly have to live 100 miles out. Every bed in Barcelona is on an Airbnb platform of some sort, and the city is thick with tourists. So, you know, they're getting sick of love it. And here in Dublin, we still want more. Well, you know, we need more money coming in. But in places like Venice or Barcelona or Paris, you can see it.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you to my guests, Caroline Reedy, Conor Falkland. Thanks for a great review of the business stories.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
Stripe helps many of the world's most influential companies grow their revenue and build a more profitable business. Whether it's Hertz making checkout a smooth ride for their customers, OpenAI answering unprecedented demand, or PGA chipping away at back office inefficiency, Stripe's financial infrastructure platform helps companies achieve ambitious goals. No matter what success looks like for your business, Stripe helps ensure the complexity of financial systems doesn't get in your way. Learn more at stripe.com.